starting sooner reduces prostate cancer mortality more. So it really, if you start between 50 and 54 versus starting at 60, for example, you can halve the risk of dying from prostate cancer. So really, if you want to reap the benefits of screening, you should start sooner than later.
Liebe Zuhörerinnen und Zuhörer, wir haben heute einen ganz besonderen Gast bei unserem aktuellen Podcast. Das ist das erste Mal, dass wir einen Podcast in Englisch machen und mir gegenüber sitzt Sigrid Karlsson. Ich kann auch so ein bisschen Deutsch sprechen, weil so ein bisschen Deutsch versteht sie auch. Hallo Sigrid.
Hallo, hallo Dr. Greifen.
Also Sigrid Karlsson ist als Visiting Professor hier bei uns für ein paar Tage in der Martini-Klinik. Wir hatten fantastische Vorträge gehört und dann kam die Idee, dass wir eigentlich mit einer der wichtigsten Persönlichkeiten auf dem Gebiet des Screenings und der Frühentdeckung, der aktiven Überwachung, einfach einen Podcast machen, dass möglichst viele unserer Zuhörer eben auch das Vergnügen haben, von diesem tiefgründigen Wissen auch zu profitieren. So we switch to English now. So welcome again, Sigrid. I just told that we had a lot of fun with you in the way that you gave excellent talks and the people were really enjoying that. And the idea came that you're doing a publication with us. We usually call it publication of the month. And I asked you to choose a paper and you've chosen one from European Urology 2023 where you are the first author. And please, maybe before you start, why don't you introduce yourself, what you're doing, where you're coming from, why are you in New York?
Thank you, Dr. Greifen. Well, ich komme aus Schweden, aber mein Deutsch ist nicht perfekt. So if we can continue in English, that would be great. And I grew up in Sweden and I lived in Gothenburg for 13 years and was a member of the group there in the urology department and worked with Professor Hugosson in the Göteborg trial. And then I did my MD and PhD there and then moved to America and the US, so New York City, for a postdoc. It was supposed to be 1 year and now I've been there 13 years and I'm a faculty member at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center where I do epidemiology and screening and prostate cancer research, and it's been a wonderful journey.
Oh, that's an impressive career, I have to say. You are part kind of the ERSBC, so you know all the background about all these screening studies, and you have chosen a paper that looked at the age or when you should start to screen. And please describe your idea behind that and how many patients you looked at and just give us an idea on the key messages.
Sure, happy to. So the unique thing about the Göteborg 1 trial was that it started between 50 to 54, as opposed to the ERSBC starting at 55 to 69. So men in the Göteborg trial included both younger and older men in this age group. But the unique thing about the Göteborg trial was that some of those men, or about 59% of the Göteborg trial, were men between 50 and 54. So that allows us to really ask the question, is screening more beneficial if you start sooner than later? And that's really what we study in this paper, because as you know, the guidelines really disagree on the age on when to start PSA testing. So for example, I'm a member of the AUA guidelines and the NCCN guidelines in the US, and we recommend starting at 45, for example, or starting even at 40 for men with increased risk, so African-American or men with family history, germline mutations, and so on. But other guidelines, such as, for example, USPSTF, they recommend starting at 55, and that's based on the ERSBC trial. But so the question was really unanswered, when is the best age to start? And so we wanted to look at this question in this paper and comparing what happens if you start between 50 and 54 versus 55 to 69.
Yeah, and I think one detail I learned from you when we discussed the paper before is that part of the Göteborg 1 study that participated kind of in the ERSBC trial took those patients starting at the age of 55 to 69. So you're looking at those who have been in that trial, but younger ones.
Correct.
And I think that is a unique database,
It is. Yeah, and so the Göteborg trial was 20,000 men, so 10,000 men randomized in each arm, so it's a large trial.
Yeah, and one thing that always fascinates me, I have to say, when we look at all these details of the ERSBC study, is the way that you randomize the patients in Göteborg. And I think that is, for me, the purest way of randomization, and maybe you comment on that.
I agree. And so the ethics committee in Sweden and Gothenburg at the time, in the mid-90s when the Göteborg trial started, really allowed this upfront randomization before informed consent. So that, as you said, is really a pure design and the truth of a population-based screening, what would happen if you invite men, as opposed to randomizing after people have consented, because you always have a selection of those who go into a trial. Yes. So it's a really nice design, and many in the control group were not invited, so it's a pure comparison.
Okay, very good. And you investigated three groups then, so like intention to screen, mm-hmm. historic control, and what was the third one?
It's only among the attendees, who were randomized to screening and also came. And
so what is the key message of your paper?
So the key message is starting sooner reduces prostate cancer mortality more. So it really, if you start between 50 and 54 versus starting at 60, for example, you can halve the risk of dying from prostate cancer. So really, if you want to reap the benefits of screening, you should start sooner than later.
And can you give us a number on intention to screen and or on whatever those who attend, and just to give our listeners an idea of what difference it makes when you start early?
Yeah, so for example, starting at age 55 really halved the risk of prostate cancer death compared to having a first PSA at 60.
I mean, that is an amazing message. So starting at the age of 50 compared to the age of 60, do I repeat it correct? Halves the risk of dying prostate cancer. I think that is a clear message for people who are asking for early detection. And
yes, and I think that's an important nuance, because when you look at the ERSBC trial, we know that that is the number one trial, the randomized trial that provided level one evidence mm-hmm. that PSA screening reduces prostate cancer mortality by about 20% at, say, 12 years of follow-up. But that estimate of 20% is then in a cohort of men 55 to 69, that was the core age mm-hmm. group in ERSBC. So if you take this paper where we started 50 to 54, that 20% estimate is probably much bigger, because mm-hmm. you start earlier.
This is something I wasn't aware, I must say, when I looked at the ERSBC data, and now having this information that we could have even done a more effective, or you did we didn't participate as Germany in this trial, the effect could have been even more, I think, goes all into the direction that slowly, I think, the criticism of early detection gets less, and the benefit is now showing with longer follow-up and understanding the details of patient selection, or man selection, I would say, better. And I think that's a very, very, very important.
Yeah, and I think that's an important nuance, because with PSA screening, you want to find prostate cancer early, but you want to find them as late as possible within the window of curability. So you don't want to start too late at 60, but do you want to start at 45 or 50? I mean, the question is still, what is the sweet spot for starting? And I think that is the closest to early detection as late as possible. That makes sense.
Yeah, it makes absolutely sense. And I think that's a very nice, say, condensed message that you're giving here. So we have in Germany this probe-based trial, 45 versus 50, and first data are coming now. We just had a journal club where we saw that there are some issues with MRI in young men, so we have to learn about that, and that's important to have a second opinion. You have now shown that the ESBC trial could have even been, or let's say screening could even be better, if you start at the age of 50. So it's now everything is pointing to direction of 50. What is your gut feeling with that?
The ProBase is really an excellent trial that will answer that question. Which men or prostate cancers would have progressed in the interim between 45 and 50? And should we start at 45, or can we wait until 50?
That would make a big difference.
Exactly. And if that number is really small, then we can justify beginning at 50. And we also have to look at the other effects. It's not just reducing prostate cancer mortality, but it's how many cancers did we find, how many were overdiagnosed, how many were possibly overtreated, and what harm did starting between 45 versus waiting until 50 cause versus, a potentially greater benefit. So it's a really, really nice randomized trial design that will answer that question once and for all.
Is there any, I don't know, probably you know Peter Albers good, and I know that you've just had together the defending of a thesis just before you came over to Hamburg. So is there anything that you kind of merge data? Is it just like we have these trials and do a mutual interpretation, or is there anything of merging data? Are you
not at this point in time, but it's definitely will be added to our collective knowledge about screening together with Göteborg and ARSPC and of course modeling studies. Because in the US the guidelines, AUA and CC and others, the Prostate Cancer Foundation, they all recommend starting it at 45 or some even at 40, mm-hmm. but there's really no level one evidence in that younger age group, and that's what the PROBASE trial will provide. But of course, a baseline PSA is a very strong prognosticator of future risk of lethal disease, so you can use, from cohort studies, we know that it's a nice way of assessing baseline risk by just measuring a PSA in early 40s. But in a screening program where men come back, you know, at regular intervals, is it justified from a population perspective to start at 45 versus 50? And you also mentioned, you know, the low prevalence of prostate cancer in younger men, and how do you interpret the MRIs in younger men? And so there's all these nuances. So I think we have to figure out what is the sweet spot for starting.
Yeah, nice that you mentioned that. This data, where did it come from? Was it from Malmö?
Yes.
Hans Lilja had this historic and investigated them together with Andrew Vickers, and they finally showed what you just said, that you can kind of recognize lethal prostate cancer very early. And that kind of, I mean, if you, like me, as a urologist who's dealing the whole life with prostate cancer now, I know my PSA, and I knew it when I was 40. And I think that's a very strong thing. On one hand, this study suggests that you do a PSA at a very early age, so it's not disturbed by BPH and all these things, and then this can predict how, let's say, the intervals when you're going to do this. Now we have a study that says early, yes, but not too early. So this is kind of a bit contradictory, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, and people have different views on that. So, you know, like you said, it's nice to know your baseline level, but if you were to consider a population-based screening program, for example, where you take into account cost-effectiveness and all these things, and you send out envelopes to men to come for regular screening, you have to look at all these things. You know, what is the best algorithm for a screening program? And that might be starting at 50 and having, say, 3 PSA tests with a couple of years in between. So I think we need to figure that out. But as you said, PSA is a fantastic marker. It's not only a diagnostic test, but it's a really strong prognostic test. So if you look at the predictive performance of PSA in midlife and predicting lethal risk of metastasis of prostate cancer death, is 90%. So it's a really, really strong marker of future life-threatening disease.
Yeah, and I think as well, like, you can predict a risk of having this, and I think as well you do a lot of relief, I would say, to other men, because the vast majority has a, you know, like a normal PSA or a low PSA, and I think you can use this as well to not do a lot of things. And I think this is always neglected in the discussions, where you think, yeah, we have to do this and this and this, but you can do many things you can avoid once you know that this patient has or this man has a low PSA level, that he does not have to come on regular basis for PSA checks, but once again in 5 years or something like that.
Yeah, I 100% agree, because oftentimes we think about screening and finding more cancers, but that's not the problem. You know, the problem with PSA screening has been overdiagnosis. So we want to only find the high-grade disease, and we want to find a risk-stratified screening algorithm that has high negative predictive value, as you mentioned. So most men, like you said, will have a normal PSA, and they will be very reassured. So, you know, 50% of men will have a PSA below 1 in midlife, and then, you know, 25% might have a PSA above 3, and they go on to further testing and so on. But it's a really, really great test to exclude men from risk. So, for example, in the Malmö studies, we show that if you're 60 and your PSA is less than 1, your 25-year risk of having lethal disease, so metastasis or death from prostate cancer, 0.2%, extremely low. So that means, you know, you can use PSA to exclude a high proportion of men.
Not as something that scares you, but something that relaxes you.
Exactly.
And I think that in the majority of men, this will be the effect. And saving money as well, because we have all money, so financial issues with all these things. So let's say your brother is coming to you, 45 years old, and says, Sigrid, I know that you do all the things, and how shall I do my prostate cancer screening or early detection program? What is your like personal recommendation in the ideal world to someone you care about?
Very good question. And we live in this era of shared decision making, so leaving it up to the person and his values and preferences and how he feels about the test. You know, if he was very worried and he can't deal with waiting for the results, or you know, in the event that he would be diagnosed with a low risk prostate cancer, he would immediately feel like, oh, you need to take it out, then he's probably not a good candidate for screening, or then I would probably advise to perhaps wait until 50. But if he's very eager to know his level and want to have that reassurance, and he could deal with the, you know, potential consequences of an elevated PSA and so on, then I think he would be a good candidate. So it's more of sort of how you feel about the test and what type of person you are. Are you the person who invests in your retirement and the future? You might want to have a PSA test. If you're more like carpe diem.
That's a very long answer for you.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think one of the issues that as well sometimes neglected is we always speak when to start and, you know, reducing the risk of dying from prostate cancer, reducing certainly the risk of overdiagnosis and so forth. At the end of the screening period, I think there's some uncertainties as well. So what is your recommendation when to stop screening? What is your opinion on that?
I think that's also another unanswered question, and we're still gathering more data. And also from the Göteborg trial, Dr. Hugosson and the team has shown that, you know, the screening stopped at 70, but we've continued to follow those men. And so you can see that the kind of the curves become parallel as they exit out of the study. So the protective effect of screening kind of stops when you stop. So I think continuing up to 74, 75, it seems to have some benefits. But on the other hand, there's also a high risk of overdiagnosis in older men. Mm-hmm. So, it's difficult, and it becomes very nuanced, and it blends into life expectancy and comorbidities and more of a personalized medicine approach. So I think it's a difference between a population-based screening program where you probably could end at 70, 74, but if it's a man who's very healthy that comes to you in your practice, and this is a different situation.
Okay. Yeah, I think we just had, two podcasts before we had the discussion on. There was another sub-publication, I would call it, from the Rotterdam arm, and as far as I remember, that 8 years after stopping the screening, the curves again move together. So you have a protective factor in there, but it can disappear if you don't keep track. And I think that is kind of contradictive in the way that you can say, yes, you can stop screening because patients are not harmed anymore, but at the end of the day, they obviously are some kind of harm, because then the mortality rates merge together. And I think it's a very difficult question that is not answered. And I think a new aspect that we have to think about, and I think the approach you probably said, like doing it on a video basis and see how healthy this guy is, how keen he is to, you know whether he has prostate cancer and so forth, is very important.
Yeah, and also the negative predictive value even there. So, for example, if a man is 75 and his PSA is less than 3, then that's another, low-risk combination, so to speak. So the same we use 60 and less than 1. So you can have those risk-stratified algorithms, if you will.
Okay. So, anything else you would like to give us as a message, from any things from your vast experience in the Swedish screening programs, anything, a certain message you would like to give to the listeners?
Well, I think having been in this field for 20 years, it fascinates me that it's still so controversial and that we're still trying to figure these things out. But I think we've made major headways, and it used to be PSA over 4, go get a biopsy. But now all the studies and everything is moving towards risk stratified algorithms and more nuances and, you know, combination of factors, age, PSA level, the man's health, other things that you can use before jumping to biopsy. So I think we have now a better balance between the benefits and the harms.
All right. Okay. So, I think it was very, very interesting. Thank you very much for showing your data on this paper and for your insights to us. And I hope you have a safe trip home. Back to where are you going from here?
Back to Sweden and to Denmark.
And then back.
And back to New York.
Very good. So thank you very much for this, and have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.